Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, April 19th, 2024. South Sudanese graduates struggle to make a living.
Sometimes I can sell like onion and then tomato, but getting them also is very difficult. I go up to Gumba Shergad to go and buy so that I can get some little amount.
And Kenyans react to a plane crash that killed the country's top military general.
This is the next person to the president. To hear that news, it was kind of a tragic event. It's a dark day for this country. I would say I'm quite sorry for the loss of the family, for the country.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some South Sudanese graduates struggling with unemployment are taking odd jobs to make ends meet. This as the country is experiencing rising inflation. There are calls for the government to help new graduates get jobs that will support their families. Denise Longoni reports from Juba.
Kerter graduated from the University of Juba School of Natural Resources and Environmental Studies in 2022. Now he works as a guard at night and in the day, sells vegetables in the market. Ker sends some of his earnings to his family living in a Uganda refugee camp, and now he regrets his time spent at the university.
Since I graduated 2022, and then up to now, I have no any job opportunity that I achieve. I just struggle by my own without any good job that I get. And which now I try to make some small business so that I can survive with it. Sometimes I can sell like onion and then tomato, but getting them also is very difficult. I go up to Gumba Shergad to go and buy so that I can get some little amount.
South Sudan is being hit hard by inflation as the South Sudanese pound continues to fall rapidly and there are obstacles exporting the country's crude oil. Many graduates are in the same dilemma as Ter. More than half the population of about 12 million is under the age of 30. Sarah KG graduated in 2017 with a diploma in human resources, but now sells tea because she can't find a job in her area of expertise. She says she has submitted countless applications seeking a job.
Things have been hard for me, but the good thing, I also tried moving around the street, and then I was able to get some small space, so I'm surviving with my tea business. That is the only thing that is helping me. And actually, with the crisis of nowadays, things are really expensive. You may end up selling something little, and then you go to the market, everything. You don't even have
Kwoji Charles earned a diploma in heavy machinery in 2018 and planned to work in agriculture, but he has not been able to get a job that matches his qualifications, so he runs a carpentry shop to make ends meet. He wants the government to create an environment that could allow youth to be employed.
The poor security situation in the country has hindered my ability to participate in agriculture, as it is not safe to work in the fields. Currently, I am utilizing my skill in carpentry to earn a living, despite facing challenges in finding stable employment. I've taken initiative to start my own carpentry business to generate income and support myself financially. While it may not be the ideal situation, I am grateful for the opportunity to work in a field that allows me to use my skills and contribute to my community.
Achieng Manyuat, an economist and a proprietor of the St. Lawrence Schools, says the government should set a syllabus for the university that would help students in fields where there are jobs, including in vocational programs.
Most of our universities' syllabus are not market-oriented because we are in 21st century. If you go to some other universities, you will find that some course units which are phased out and they still exist. There is no kind of vocational training which has been given to majority of our youth, where you find majority can attend those who have not attained a degree level to get trained electrical, plumbing, and construction industry. It is not happening. My advice to the government is to provide at least 2 to 3 colleges in each state.
Soro Richard, a 2017 graduate whose degree specializes in physics and mathematics, says the government should implement the country's peace agreement. He says that would attract investors and ensure support for young entrepreneurs who later will employ other graduates.
I am a graduate of education specializing in mathematics and physics. As I talk, I have nothing to do since because of this unemployment. This is a normal process here, which has been normalized, but actually it's not right. It's taken me long. I didn't get a job based on the labor force being more than the available jobs around. I have sat more than 3 interviews, but they keep on promise. The other time I reached an extent that being told that, wait, you will be called to sign the official contract, and after now nothing happened.
South Sudan graduates thousands of students every year. Last year, the University of Juba graduated more than 4,500 students. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonye reporting from Juba.
French President Emmanuel Macron says world leaders are pledging more than $2.1 billion in aid for Sudan, according to the Associated Press. The aid will go to food, water, medicines, and other urgent needs, he said, without providing a specific timeline. A year of war has pushed the Northeast African country's population to the brink of famine. Macron spoke earlier this week at the end of an international conference in Paris aimed at drumming up support for Sudan's people. Sudan's warring parties did not take part. Top diplomatic envoys, UN officials, and aid agencies gathered at the conference urged the warring generals to stop committing human rights violations and allow access for humanitarian aid. Is still on Sudan, dozens of Sudanese Americans held a rally early this week to urge action on Sudan as the war between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces crossed the one-year mark. VOA Swahili Service reporter Huba Abdi spoke with some of the participants at the rally in Washington, D.C.
Lukman Ahmed, Director General for SBC Sudan Broadcasting Corporation.
How was it when the war broke out?
It was something unimaginable. I was there. I was just living my normal daily life. And I remember it was Friday night. And then it was the last week of Ramadan. And I went on a special iftar events. And then I went back home. And in early in the morning of the Saturday, we heard the bombardment and the loud noise of the bombing. And I wasn't expect that to be a war. And then people are telling us that the war is just erupted between the RSF and the SAF. That was something very bad in Sudan history and in that days in Ramadan. Before I used to be Director General for Sudan Radio and TV, and I was dismissed by Burhan, the chairman of the Security Council, before the war. So I was dealing with other issues. So I wasn't reporting at a time, but I stayed in my apartment like for 5 or 6 days till I was get attacked inside my apartment. And it was a miracle for me that to survive that attack. And then I had to leave my apartment to go to another area. And it was a very difficult time for me to make it even out of Sudan. And that's a situation with many Sudanese people who are forced to leave the country.
It's 1 year now. What do you think of Sudan?
Sudan is completely destroyed. And millions of people either being displaced inside the country or seek refuge to another countries, and the infrastructure of the country is being destroyed. There is no services, education, health, all other services now completely destroyed. And 1 year later, the only solution is this war has to be stopped right now.
And You are saying Sudan has been forgotten. Is that true?
Of course, Sudan is being forgotten, and there is no enough attention toward Sudan. And by having this rally here today and other events around the war and around the globe, I hope that it's get an attention. So a pressure could be put and made on these worrying parties in Sudan so they can stop this senseless war.
My name is Sarah Zinalabdin. I'm a teacher from Augusta, Georgia. We drove about 8 hours to get to the capital to support Sudan and Sudanese people and remind people about the forgotten war and the worst famine that's about to happen in the world. And I hope everybody can join us and support Sudan.
Have you been to Sudan? And if you have been to Sudan, how was the situation in Sudan before?
I haven't been to Sudan after the war, but I was there 6 months before the war. Of course, there was economic hardship. However, the people were not expecting this to happen, unfortunately.
Sudan. What are you looking forward in Sudan in today's
All eyes on
peace
Sudan.
And justice.
Do you think you let the
All eyes
Sudan
on Sudan.
Forgotten?
Yes, they have been forgotten. Today All is the one-year on anniversary Sudan. Of the war, and nobody talks about it.
All
Unfortunately, that's why we are here. We want to remind people about the
all
war in Sudan, about
Sudan.
All the destruction and the killing and the displacement
Peace and justice
to the people
Sudan.
Of Sudan.
You traveled for 8 hours to be
Peace
here.
Peace and justice for
back,
Sudan.
What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking for a new
for
Sudan,
Sudan
that enjoys peace and
what
justice.
We
and we will rebuild
what
it together.
It? What do we want?
Thank you.
What do we want it?
Some of the participants at the Sudan rally in Washington, D.C. earlier this week. Kenya has begun 3 days of official mourning after its defense chief and 9 other military personnel were killed in a helicopter crash yesterday. General Francis Omondi Ogola, the chief of the Kenya Defense Forces, was killed when his helicopter went down shortly after takeoff in a remote forested area of northwestern Kenya on Thursday. A distinguished four-star general has fallen in the course of duty and service of the country, President William Ruto declared as he announced the deaths that evening. Journalist Robin Chama today spoke with people in Nairobi to hear their reactions to the crash. Maggie Otieno is a Kenyan visual artist and sculptor, and she calls for unity in the face of the losses.
So where we are at a nation now, I think it's such a tremendous loss, I must say. For me, it's just prayers for the nation. Because these military guys, they were people who we have known, and some of them, you know, sometimes even as much as they are far from you as a Mwananchi, you know that these are people who make great decisions for the security of the nation. So mine is just to condole with the family members and to pray for the nation. We should not speculate, because Kenyans, we like speculating a lot and trying to see was there something sinister. But I think it's not time for that. It's time to just pray for the nation.
Oliver Odhiambo, an IT specialist, called the crash a tragedy.
The first thing that came into mind was like, this is the next person to the president. To hear that news, it was kind of a tragic event. It's a dark day for this country. I would say I'm quite sorry for the loss of the family, for the country. I wish things would have gone otherwise, but we're still together.
Businesswoman Sarah Nkata said the country needs to support the families of those who died.
It was shocking and saddening for the nation, but it's something we have to come to terms with. Yeah, we should support the family in terms of mourning, praying for them to find peace and comfort, because it's not easy to lose a loved one. Security in Kenya has been a challenge in the past, so my message is to really support and comfort their families until they're laid to rest. So we should mourn, pray for the families, the friends, and whoever they were working with, the colleagues, because it's not easy to let go. But we should pray for God to give us the spirit of letting go.
Javan Oliej, a security guard at Mount Kenya University, said more needs to be done to prevent such accidents.
So I was shocked. I'm still shocked. If there are some things that can be done to to prevent whatever happened, those who are in charge should look the best way to help, because we don't want to lose more of our people here. Put hearts together to comfort those ones who are facing the difficulties, the families. Yeah. We are supporting them emotionally, spiritually. We are praying for them. Yeah. My message to the entire country, the 3 days should not be a joke. It should be something serious for each one of us, be it a person working in the government or not, because we all know the military, so we all know their work. So at least the 3 days, it's for all of us. Yeah.
Ogolo's family announced that a funeral would be held on Sunday at his home in Siasa County in the west of the country, followed by a memorial service in a Nairobi suburb on April 26th. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we have listener comments lined up for you. Stay tuned.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. A lack of clean water in health facilities across 7 African countries is causing enormous rates of infections, which are leading to tens of thousands of avoidable deaths, according to the group WaterAid. Catherine Nightingale, who is WaterAid's Global Director of International Affairs and attending this week's World Bank IMF Spring Meetings in Washington, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam she presented data to world leaders, bankers and donors on the impact of infections at health facilities in Africa, and how billions of dollars could be saved if countries invested in providing clean water at health facilities.
We looked at Ethiopia, Ghana, Mali, Malawi, Nigeria, Zambia, and Uganda. And these are really typical countries. They range, you know, across Africa, but as examples in terms of size, but they're pretty typical of the fact that in a lot of parts, there are not water and sanitation facilities in the health centers that people might be going to when they're sick, when they're going to give birth, when they're going to get vaccinated, when they're going to look after their children or get their children seen to. And what that means is that they can go into these facilities and acquire an infection, and then that can have a knock-on impact. It can mean that they get very sick, it means they're off work, it might mean that they die tragically, and all of that has a huge, not only emotional cost to the people who lose loved ones, but also a huge economic cost if people can't work and they can't bring that income in. So we worked to kind of calculate the cost of those healthcare acquired infections, and in doing so, we were able to show that in the year 2022, there are 2.6 million healthcare-associated infections across those 7 countries. Overall, those led to 275,000 deaths. And those numbers are likely to be an underestimate because they only really focus on people who went into hospital. And at WaterAid, we know that water and sanitation and hygiene are one of the main ways you can stop infections happening. So if we can get kind of the measures in place, including really good wash in those facilities, water, sanitation and hygiene, we call it WASH, then we know we can reduce this. And we calculated that we could reduce it by half. And we calculated that actually we could be investing, you know, maybe just $1 per person, per capita in each country, and you'd be able to get that water and sanitation into the health facilities and really, really cut this down by half.
That was your message. You wanted basically the bankers and financiers who were attending these meetings to say, look, this is so obvious and we can cut the costs in half and save lives in the making if you just give us this money, and then we'll build these water facilities in the hospitals and the health facilities. Right.
We weren't even asking for it for us necessarily. We were saying to the finance ministers in those governments, and in fact, we were very pleased to have with us the Minister of Finance from Malawi, who joined us for our event and talked to us about how useful it is to have data that demonstrates that you can make this investment and you can sort of save money as a result.
This data is being presented not just to the bankers and the big executives and the World Bank and IMF folks. It's going back to the countries in Africa. Their leaders saying, look, just do this. You'll save so much in costs and in lives.
That's right. That's exactly it. We're trying to help give them the tools to make the case inside their governments. And we're, you know, talking to finance ministers, also presenting. It's just launched, Carol. So we're really hoping to present it, you know, ongoing in the next few weeks so that these national governments and their ministries of health and ministries of water and sanitation can see just how important this investment is.
That was Catherine Nightingale, WaterAid's Global Director of International Affairs. She was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa has granted amnesty to 4,000 prisoners as part of efforts to decongest his country's crowded jails. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, where Mnangagwa pardoned some prisoners last year, though some ended up back in jail.
That's the sound of jubilant pardoned prisoners leaving Zimbabwe's Chikurubi Maximum Prison in Harare. The prisoners were freed Friday after President Emmerson Mnangagwa granted amnesty to female prisoners, those with chronic ailments, juveniles, and those with life sentences who have served at least 20 years. There was no reprieve for murderers, treasonous, armed robbers, and those facing death sentences who were imprisoned for life. Moses Chihovu, head of the Zimbabwe Prisons and Correctional Services Agents, spoke with reporters.
We had plus 24,000 prisoners each side. So the 4,000 going out, we remain with about 20,000. Still, the prisons are still full. We are full with more than 3,000 after this release, because the space to accommodate an inmate was very difficult for us to get, and also the food, medical, there's a lot of things which we benefited from this release.
The prisoners refused to be identified, but were willing to talk to reporters as they left the jail. One of them says, I was surprised to hear my name on the pardoned prisoners. They had called others and mine came out and I was really thrilled. I am grateful for the release. I look forward to start using the skills I got in the prison to look after my family. I had been arrested for unlawful entry and I had 15 months left on my sentence. This prisoner is happy to leave jail too. He says, for sure it's painful inside there. I'd been detained after stealing where I was staying. I stole from my uncle. I had just served 2 months, but it was really painful. They treated us well, but jail is painful. I learned not to take other people's stuff. I learned a lot in the prison. I'm going to tell colleagues to remain outside, as inside prison is painful. Zimbabwe's last pardon was in May last year, but prisons continue filling up. Obet Muzembe, a criminologist at Muzembe Law Chambers, blames the declining economy.
You look at the inflation rate in Zimbabwe, and that's put pressure on the society, and many weak members of the society end up resorting to unlawful means to survive. There are a number of issues that can be done in order to deal with the situation? Number one, of course, we need to educate the society, educate the community about crime. Number two, you need the church to come up. Napoleon Bonaparte once said that the church is the moral compass of the society. And then obviously there are economic measures that need to be taken in order to improve the well-being of the people. But above all, we need the society itself to come through in terms of education through the church and various stakeholders.
Those who were pardoned last year and were arrested again did not qualify for amnesty announced this week by President Mnangagwa. Columbus Mavungam, VOA News, Harare.
It's time for our Friday listener comments segment. And as usual, many of you wrote to us about news and events we covered in this broadcast. First, we have this voice message.
This is Peter Gochanyang with Jongdoli in Jongdoli State, South Sudan. My condolences to the families who lost their loved one in the plane crash today in Kenya. May God bring comfort and solidarity to the families and also let the disease rest in its eternal peace.
Martin Manuel Ugol in Numuli also writes, kindly allow me to convey my heartfelt condolences to Kenya's defense forces upon the untimely death of Army Chief General Francis Ogola and other serving personnel. May their innocent souls rest in peace. Amen. Khan Stephen says, hello, Voice of America on South Sudan in Focus. I appreciate the community invitation you make for their progress and change. Samuel Remo in Ye says, hi, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. The international community should speed up with its planned resolution to end the war in Khartoum because the ongoing crisis in Khartoum has a negative impact on our economy and food surplus, which were coming from Sudan. And thanks. Thomas Kuntoj in Juba City says, hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. The marking of full 1 year of Sudan war today on April 15th, it devastated the whole country economically and socially. All African presidents have ignored the war in Sudan without intervention. The AU also overlooked the Sudan conflict for a whole year. Mal Adaumal in Seattle, Washington says, hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. The conflict in Khartoum is affecting everyone in the two Sudans, and it looks like there is a sabotage from the neighboring countries and allies that hinders the breakthrough to end the war. Both the refugees from Sudan and the innocent South Sudanese are bearing the brunt. Thank you. Majak Marco Majong from Warab State in South Sudan says, hello, John. I condemn the fighting that was taking place at Makwaj Bayam in Jongole State over an engagement of a certain girl on the road by a young man, which left 27 people wounded. And I think our people should not take the law into their hands. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming. And that's all we have for you this Friday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with Mose Sesingo and the song Africa Moto. we'll be listening to Africa Moto by Moses Singo. I'm your host, Nabil Bia, joined Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter Huntley, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.